Hello out there in Nala Land. We resume. This is a continuation class. Last time we learned about how to criticize and how not to criticize. And we could probably label this best as how to criticize and how not to criticize, part B. My source is the work by Rabbi Joseph Telushkin, To Be Holy. Most of my material is drawn from him. And this class is always his little nishmas rachalei basuf chaim si aleh shalom. Okay, now, here is a good thing to remember. You should try and acknowledge your faults that are in common with those that you are criticizing. This will make it all that much easier for you to accept rebuke when you realize that you're as guilty as the other person that you wish to rebuke, that you have the same faults, same foibles, and the very same flaws. When Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the great Rav Chaim Brisker, when he would give a Shabbos Tshuva Drasha, now, of course, Rav Chaim Brisker, like the Chafetz Chaim, there are countless stories about him. And it's hard to know how many stories are apocryphal, how many really happened to another tzaddik. You know, I've heard many a time stories which I know to be about Yisrael Salanter told about the Chafetz Chaim. Stories which I know to be about the Chafetz Chaim told about Yisrael Salanter, etc., etc. And the story about Rav Chaim Brisker, which really happened to the Brisker Rav. This story I know to be accurate because the story was told by the Rav himself, Rabbi, the Rav Chaim Brisker's grandson, Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik. And this is what the Rav Chaim used to say in the Shabbos Shuva Drasha. He would say, Chaim is speaking to Chaim. But if you wish, you can eavesdrop. There's another rabbi who would say to his audiences, don't think that I'm innocent of all the offenses that I'm enumerating. I too have enumerated some of them. All that I'm doing, therefore, is speaking aloud to myself. And if anything you might overhear applies to you as well, well and good. This is a very productive way to handle one-on-one situations when you wish to offer criticism. Accept part of the blame. Admitting that you too have struggled with the same problems, and this makes the other party far less ashamed to admitting doing wrong, and you can prompt this person to seek your help in trying to rectify their flaw. Nextly, it's very important that you should not make unrealistic demands upon a person that you're criticizing. I cannot think of a better example, as is related in the Tnuas HaMusar, that Yisrael Salanter, the granddad of the Musar movement. And I use this example as people always credit him legitimately with having fathered the Musar movement, the movement of ethical perfection. But the fact of the matter is, when you hear this story, it really makes you aware of the fact that he just as legitimately could be the father of the Tshuva movement. He lived in Memel, Germany. Memel is not all that far from Lithuania. It's a port town. There aren't many ports in Germany. And all the workers, all the longshoremen, all the dock workers were all Mechalalei Shabbos. They all desecrated the Shabbos. So what would Yisrael Salanter do? Shabbos morning after Shul, he'd go to the ports and say, good Shabbos, my friends. And not with his nose in the air, you know, oh, I'm holy, I'm Shabbos. No, Shabbos, how are you? How's your wife? How's the kids? And they loved him. After several weeks, perhaps it was even months, after he'd really befriended him, said, my friends, I want to ask you a favor. He said, Rabbi, for you anything, whatever you request, it be our pleasure. He said, I wanted to know if I could ask you a favor. Go ahead. Do you think it's possible that instead of writing down the inventory what you load on Shabbos, you can write the inventory on Motzi Shabbos? Rabbi, there is no, forget. How in the world? This is our job. We have to write down, we'll forget. We got to write. But, you know, maybe conceivable, perhaps. I mean, theoretically, I mean, hypothetically, we could try. And they succeeded. Several weeks later, Several weeks later, Yisrael Salanter approached him and said, my friends, may I ask you a favor, Rabbi? For you, anything, just anything. Well, whatever you want, it would be our honor. Well, I was wondering, do you think it's possible not to write down on Shabbos the inventory that you load on the boats? No. We already stopped writing down what we unload, but how are we going to keep a record? There is no way. Hypothetically, we could try. And they succeeded. And then several weeks later, once again, Yisrael Salanter approached him on Shabbos and said, my friends, may I ask you a favor, Rabbi? You know, there's nothing we wouldn't do for you. He said, I was wondering, do you think it's possible that you don't unload the ships on Shabbos? Maybe Friday afternoon, work a little bit later, Saturday night. Now I'm going to roll up my sleeves, I'm going to help. But, this is what we do for a living. We don't write down the inventory anymore. We don't write down what we load. We don't write down what we unload. But how in the world can you avoid unloading the boats on Shabbos? Maybe if you want to help, I guess we could try. And they succeeded. And as you can imagine, just a few weeks later, he said, and how about maybe not loading the boats on Shabbos? We could do it Friday, Saturday night, Sunday. And in the course of a year, the entire town turn Shomer Shabbos. He turned around the town. This was with love. And it was the proper way to give criticism. He didn't make unrealistic demands. You know, stop. Shkotzim, you're mechal shop. No. Maybe we could do one thing. Stop writing. Then another week later, stop writing what you're loading. Then a few weeks later, don't make unrealistic demands. It's a beautiful example of how to make the right approach. For example, if you know someone who is, be they wealthy or not, but they don't give the proper amount of money to charity, it's unrealistic to say to them, you should be giving a tenth of your money to charity. Tell them, maybe you think that this year you can give 1% more. Maybe climb from 2% to 3%. 3% to 4%. Wait a little longer, 4% to 5%. And don't right away say, you should give a tenth of your money to income. It's unrealistic to make such a demand. Not only that, but let's say someone who is a gossiper. Now you tell a person who's a gossiper, and this is an addiction. You know, stop gossiping, refrain from lashon hara, don't besmirch, don't smear, don't belittle, and only speak good about other people, never bad. That's an unrealistic demand. A realistic request is saying maybe you could refrain 1 hour a day from speaking lashon hara. Speak from 2 to 3 in the morning without lashon hara. And then ask them maybe 2 to 3 in the afternoon, and then 2 to 5, and 2 to 6, and hopefully increase. Don't make unrealistic demands. Another thing is, it's very important that you should confine your criticism to a specific act. In other words, you might say, I noticed that you were making fun of so-and-so, and avoid a blanket statement such as, you're always making fun of others. General criticism always demoralizes. So you can be specific, that's legit. But to belittle a person by saying, you're always doing this, it makes the offender go on the defensive. Because, think about it, who in the world would be willing to admit, you know something, you're right. I'm really a creep. I'm a jerk. You're really right. It's true. I'm a cruel person. I always make fun of others. And since no one would ever admit that about themselves, how are you expecting them to believe it when you tell them that's what you do? Say one specific thing, a person can make a flaw. I'm reminded of the Dat Yomi Shir that I go to. The Magid Shir is a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and his father is one of the greatest Rosh Yeshivas alive. Greatest meaning not only as a great Rosh Yeshiva, but one of the largest yeshivos in the annals of Jewish history. And so it's not my place ever to criticize him, and there's not much to criticize at all. But it happened that people were commenting that his father, the great Rosh Yeshiva, went to Menachem Avil, someone, and it made a big difference to the Avil that this great Rosh Yeshiva came to console him. And so at this point, my Magid Shir said, you know, I'm the one who brought him, I'm the one who made him go to be Menachem Avil. And I thought to myself that that wasn't the most appropriate way to say this. And I was about to say something, and the Magid Shir was what I call an observant Jew, noticed I was about to say something. He said, what do you want to say? And I said, no. And so after the Shir, he said to me, what was on your mind? And I said, I'll wait till later. And I waited till everybody left the room, and I said to him, perhaps you might have said, I suggested the Rosh Yeshiva to come, or I proposed, or I... thought it would be a wise idea. But to say, I made the Rosh Yeshiva come, I thought was an inappropriate term to use about the Rosh Yeshiva. And he right away realized, you're so right. That's the way. Don't make generalizations. You're always saying things and asserting honor. But rather, make a if you say something specific that people are willing to accept. Okay, albeit, it's generally forbidden to rebuke another person in public, but if remaining silent will cause people to think that you're condoning unethical behavior, in such an instance, it would be much better to speak out. As a rule, you may never criticize in public, but if your silence will be interpreted or misinterpreted as condoning, accepting, believing what is being said, it's preferable to speak out. Now, if you're in a group and someone starts speaking unfairly about someone who's not present, you should not allow the gossiper to continue. You have to point out that it's unfair. As we said many a time, perhaps the most underscored evil of Lashon Hara is that fundamentally it's just unfair. Someone is being criticized in public and he's not there to defend himself. She cannot justify what's being said, you know, her behavior. So you have to point out that what's being said is unfair and it's forbidden. Now, if the circumstances make it very difficult for you to do so, and it's very hard to defend the reputation of the person being defamed, at the very least, you should try and change the subject. And if that fails, then get up and leave. But the obligation to give criticism is a critically vital one. And of course, the Rambam paskens this in Hilchos Tshuva, And the Gemara says explicitly in the Bar Zohar Daf Yud Ches, if you are an opportunity to rectify someone, you don't do this, then that sin is occurred upon you as well. This is a pretty serious matter. Okay, we have a very good model for this, and that is Nosson HaNavi, the prophet Nosson, when he learned that David HaMelech had been with Bathsheba, and he arranged for her husband, Uriah, to be killed in battle. A very famous story, just hardly anyone doesn't know this, but nonetheless, I think it's worth quoting. So what happened was, is that Nosson realized he must give criticism to David HaMelech, who took away this man's wife, and sent him off to battle to be killed. And so what does Nosson do? He tells the king he has a problem. I want to discuss this with you. And the Nosson, and I'm going to read this in English from the Novi and Shmuel, from Shmuel Beis. He approaches the king to solicit his advice about an injustice that has been done. He asks the king, what shall I do? And I'm going to quote now from the Novi. There were two men in the same city. One was rich and one was poor. The rich man had very large flocks and herds, but the poor man had only one little ewe lamb that he had bought. He tended to it, and it grew up together with him and his children. He used to share his morsel of bread, drink from his cup, and nestle in his bosom. It was like a daughter to him. One day a traveler came to the rich man, but he was loath to take anything from his own flocks or herds to prepare a meal for the guest who had come to speak to him. So he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. At this point, David HaMelech flies into a rage against the man, and he says to Nosson, as the Lord lives, the man who did this deserves to die. At that point, Nosson says his immortal words, Ataish, you are the man. And Nosson was very successful in conveying Musa, which otherwise may not have been accepted. By depersonalizing his critique, at least until the very end, Nosson was able to have David HaMelech view the act in its moral simplicity. Once David declared the verdict, the man who does this deserves to die, and thus responded, this man is you, then David had no other choice but to recognize, to admit and to confess that he merited the very same condemnation. Because Nosson knew how to offer criticism, David learned how to repent. In other words, if you really feel bad about the person, you really feel bad what the person is doing, you have to give your criticism in a way that will be efficacious and puissant. If a person can't accept criticism, then you're not being effective. I cannot remember the names, partially because they're Chinese names, but in the late 1950s, let's see if I wrote his name down somewhere. Yeah, Mao Zedong, that evil leader of China, everyone was afraid of him, and for good reason. He was a very evil man. So part of communism was that everything is fine and everything is good. So there was a famine. And that year, I think it was 1959, there were 30 million less tons of wheat than there had been the year before. But they were afraid to tell Mao Zedong because he would fly into a rage. So at one point, the Minister of Defense wrote a letter saying that you're being naive, you're not aware of the fact that there's a shortage, when everyone else was telling him that things are even better than the year before because they were so scared of him. And because of that, he had this Minister of Defense tortured and murdered, and instead of knowing how to criticize him, as everyone was afraid to, because they were unable to criticize him, the one who tried to speak up was brought to his death. Okay, we continue. Says Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv, one of the great disciples of Rav Salanter, if you criticize someone and they don't change quickly, don't become angry. Why? Says Rav Simcha Zissel, you should aware of the fact that teachers often lose their temper with students, and a teacher will criticize a student three times, four times, and still the student doesn't change. Says Rav Simcha Zissel, think to yourself, how many times have you been criticized and you still don't change? And yet, what do? You get angry at the student who doesn't change. You're the same guilty party. Joseph Delushkin quotes a theologian who said, you get angry at people who you criticize to change their ways, and you don't realize that you yourself, why are you getting angry? They don't change their ways. The woman who worked for me, and it bothered me that certain things she did I thought was inappropriate, until one day I realized, why am I getting angry at her? Things I do are wrong, and I don't change, so why am I getting angry at someone else? Okay. Don't be angry that you cannot make other people as you wish them to be, since you can't make yourself as you wish to be. Okay, we're just about to finish. let's give some list of behaviors that one should avoid. Firstly, don't talk about the person to other people. In other words, the obligation to rebuke someone means that you have to rebuke to the sinner and not destroy their good name. In other words, this is something which is very difficult to do. As a rule, if you see someone doing something wrong, especially if they do something wrong to you, particularly if you are the party that's offended, it is human nature to go tell other people what this person did, which is wrong. So you have no right to do this. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, if someone does something which is hurtful to you, you must go first to that person before you tell other people. And even if your justification is you want other people to correct that person, still the first address is to go to the person who is the guilty party. That's the first thing you should do. If you feel that someone acted inappropriately towards us, it is very tempting to share our resentment with other people. The first thing we should do is confront the offender and give this person the opportunity to explain their behavior and to reform. And even if this person does not reform, does not rectify, doesn't change their behavior, that still does not give us license to tell other people about it. Unless in the rare instances that we have to share the information with others because other people need to know about this. Therefore, before you criticize, before you admire someone, ask yourself the following questions. Try and remember this. One, am I being fair or am I exaggerating? Number two, will my words hurt the other people's feelings? And if so, how can I express myself without inflicting too much pain? Number three, how would I feel if someone criticized me this way? Number four, am I enjoying the fact that I'm able to dig into this person, able to diss this person, criticize this person? That should be a red light if you're enjoying giving the criticism. Number six, is my criticism confined to a specific act or trait? Because it's not specific. Once you generalize, you've lost everything. And lastly, are my words non-threatening and at least in part reassuring? Until you've answered all of these questions, don't admonish, rebuke. And it says in Parshas Kedoshim, you shall rebuke, yes, you shall rebuke your fellow man, but you should not bear sin because of him. So Rashi explains that though rebuking him, you should not publicly embarrass him, in which case you will have sinned on account of this individual. Shaming someone is both ineffective and immoral. If you're rebuking a person for a serious offense, once you shame them, that will only put them on the defensive, and you lost all your efficacious ability to bring about a change. It'll make your words far less effective. And if you're rebuking, this perspective is so critical to have a sense of proportion. If you're rebuking someone for doing a small offense, let's say a parent is rebuking a child who broke a glass, shaming them is a greater sin than the offense itself. Shaming a child for having broken something, you know, you shame a child in the street who dropped something and broke it, what you've done is a greater crime than what the child has done. So you need that perspective. The best way to avoid shaming a person is to deliver the criticism privately. With soft language, says the Sefer Chinuch, with soft language and with gentle words. To be resumed.